You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here's your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
You had to know it was coming. Of course, if any day to play the funk music, the happy music, to get pumped up, it had to be this one. The Denver Nuggets, your Denver Nuggets, are going to the postseason for the first time since Hector was a pup, as Chris Marlowe would say. And on top of that, they did it in great fashion. You know, I was starting to worry that the Nuggets were going to get into the playoffs on the backs of a Sacramento Kings loss and an off night. And how anticlimactic would that have been? Instead, they do so in Boston against the Celtics on a road win, a statement win, their fourth win in a row, and just a lot of good vibes around this team. It's a great moment to be a Denver Nuggets fan. And I'm going to talk about that moment. Because I really do think this is a cool little period that we're in as Denver Nuggets fans, and especially a fans of this specific team. This team is in a very, very, very fun part of their arc, and hopefully it only gets better from here. But regardless, this is a night I think we're celebrating. This episode of the show is going to be on that win. I am going to wax poetic a little bit at the end, as I tend to do from time to time when there's a big moment, and this one qualifies. But for the most part, we're just going to talk about the win over the Celtics, which was an important one. So let's dive right into it. Let me just say right off the top that I thought this was a game where the Nuggets' process offensively was really good. Really, really good. This was one of the better games, I thought, from Jokic on the season. And the team as a whole, just the patience that they displayed was great. But unfortunately, it was disguised a little bit by starting the game ice cold. They got some great looks, worked the ball around, the type of shots you want from the people you want taking those shots. They just couldn't get them to fall down. But here's the thing that I think is that is important with this Nuggets team. We are now talking about three games in a row. If you go back to the Minnesota game, so four games back now, you know, Denver made all of their shots in that game and they looked phenomenal. They looked like world beaters. In the two games following that one, you had Dallas and you had Indiana. Denver just, they couldn't get shots to fall, but they had good process. But what was most encouraging, more than anything else that's happened in the last 2 weeks, I would say, what's most encouraging is that when the Nuggets have faced adversity, they have stayed patient in the half court and they have trusted their half court offense. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the Nuggets have now won four in a row at the exact moment when they've sort of relearned what it is that makes them great on the offensive end. And that is their patience and their ball movement. If anything, you could say in this game, the Nuggets got a little too patient at times, especially in that first quarter. There was a little bit of guys, we call them record scratches, where the guys get an open shot, an open opportunity, but they pass up for whatever reason. There was a couple of those in this game, but it was incredible to watch. The Nuggets, you know, things aren't going their way. They didn't press. They just stayed within themselves. And the defensive execution was phenomenal. This game reminded me more of games early on in the season where it's almost a mixture of the best parts of Denver on each side of the ball. On the offensive end, they were patient. They worked the ball around. They had 29 assists. Probably could have had 35 assists if they would have just hit, you know, average amount of shots that were wide open with their shooters. But defensively, the execution in this game was phenomenal. This is one of the better defensive games I think the Nuggets have played over the last couple weeks. And Denver's been good on that side of the court. But this one, they just were locked in. The rotations, the second efforts, all of that stuff was really, really good. And that's what allowed them to survive such a cold shooting start. They could have, this was one of those games they could have fallen behind early, but instead they grabbed a lead, even though they weren't getting what they wanted. And Jokic in this game, I don't know if it was the way that the Celtics defended him, his confidence against a guy like Al Horford or whatever it is, but his timing in this game was just so great. He seemed to be playing at his speed, as he often does, but he just seemed to be in control this whole game. When he wanted to score, he went right to his spots and scored. He finished 9 of 14 from the field. So you're talking about a really good defender in Al Horford. Jokic 9 of 14, like, and his 4 of his 5 missed shots were from behind the 3-point line. So when he went inside, he did whatever he wanted. And it felt like the game was coming to him. And I don't know if that is, again, because of the patience that the team demonstrated. If you remember, when they lost to the Warriors, somebody asked about how can you get Nikola Jokic going, and Malone said, just pass him the ball. You play through him, good things happen. Well, this is one of those games where it felt like he was touching the ball on every play, and as a result, he looked like Peyton Manning out there, just orchestrating an offense that couldn't be stopped in terms of just generating the looks that they wanted. So Denver could have been up good. It was great to see the one guy who was knocking down shots in that first quarter from behind the three-point arc was Gary Harris, and it was really good to see Gary Harris, I don't want to say get the monkey off of his back, because he finished 5 of 13, 16 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. He was a plus 5, 4 of 7 from 3, more importantly. But I don't want to say this was like a great Gary Harris game, but it certainly, he was knocking down some of the shots that you need him to knock down, those rhythm kick-out shots. He was the one guy early on, so that was nice. And then, of course, Isaiah Thomas, one of the big stories of this game, and any other night, you know, would have been a much bigger story, but there's too many other things happening with the Nuggets right now that it kind of became a sideshow. But Isaiah Thomas gets into the game, and of course, the backstory here, Isaiah Thomas's best year, really his one great year, I guess he had 2 years there, but one in particular, really great year in Boston. You know, it means a lot to go back there. That was the year he felt most like himself. He looked like the player he envisions himself to be. And so it was nice for him to get back out on the court. Now, I know a lot of fans, he was a minus 8 in 6 minutes, and I know a lot of fans were kind of uneasy because Denver had built a lead. They go to that second unit, and I thought Isaiah Thomas was fine. I don't think he played bad in this game. He was a minus 8, but I thought, you know, he stepped out of bounds. He missed two wide open shots. So, you know, he could have knocked those down. You could say that would be your complaint. But look, he wasn't the only guy missing shots in this game in that first quarter. But I thought he was absolutely fine. The team just kind of struggled there while he was in. But nonetheless, it was nice to give him that moment. For people that question Malone's decision to do that, you know, the harm, first of all, if they would have lost this game by one or two, can you imagine the takes we would have had to have endured from people saying, oh, he ruined the game, he lost it, Malone has no spine or whatever. I actually applaud Malone for giving him these minutes because it was, in my opinion, it was controlled. This was a big message to him. Isaiah Thomas chose the Nuggets. Malone had the backbone to bench him. And Malone has talked about this a lot. He said, Isaiah Thomas isn't happy with me. This isn't a situation where he's like, him and Isaiah Thomas are going out for coffee and tea and strumpets. I think that things are pretty icy between them because of this decision. But Michael Malone had the backbone to make what was the decision that was right for the team. And so for him to throw him a bone and say, look, you might never get back, but here's your chance to get a standing ovation. You're going to get a tribute video, all these things. Here's your chance to really embrace that and to get on the court. I think that not only sent a message to Isaiah Thomas, but it sent a message around the league that Malone is a high character guy who understands the importance of these sort of symbolic moments. So Denver survived it. I thought Isaiah Thomas played fine in his 6 minutes. And more importantly, it was just kind of a cool moment for NBA fans around the world to get to experience. Got a lot more notes on this game, but before I do you know that you can fill out your tourney bracket at DraftKings this year? That's right, DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, has a totally free bracket with tens of thousands of dollars up for grabs. Everyone fills out a bracket during the tourney, so you might as well do it on an award-winning app with tons of free prizes. For the first time ever, DraftKings is offering a bracket battle promotion with $64,000 in prizes. I want to see Villanova, Duke, Gonzaga for my buddy Paul Klee. Those are the three teams I want to see go deep into the tourney. You know how brackets work? Before tip-off of the first game of the tournament, you pick the winner of every game, every round. That's all there is to it. And the best part is you can play for free when you use the code DRIBBLE. Dribble like dribbling a basketball. You can even set up a private group if you just want to compete against your friends or family for bragging rights. So download the DraftKings app or head to DraftKings.com now. Use promo code DRIBBLE to enter a bracket for free, and you can enter to win your share of $64,000. That's code DRIBBLE, like dribble a basketball. Do it for free, and you can win. Torrey Craig was really good in this one, and he got a great opportunity. 21 minutes, 5 of 7 from the field, 13 points. He was a plus 12. He had 8 rebounds, 2 assists as well, used up 5 fouls. So he was really, really good in this one. I think he belongs in the rotation, probably above Trey Lyles. You could probably use those guys a little bit more interchangeably. You know, maybe if there's a bigger bodied player that you feel like you want to have Trey Lyles out there, that works. But you know, one of the things when I'm watching Denver, especially as you gear towards the playoffs, teams, and Boston did this tonight, they only play three bigs. Sometimes they'll go with a two big look, but a lot of times they'll go with just one big out there in a stretch, like a Marcus Morris type guy. And when you have those type of guys out there, I'm not sure that it makes a ton of sense to have a Mason Plumlee playing a ton of minutes. Tonight, Mason Plumlee only 20 minutes, 21 minutes, basically. Paul Millsap, 27. I kind of like those minutes. In the playoffs, of course, Millsap's going to play more, but I kind of like the idea of Plumlee's minutes being down and playing a little bit more like a real backup and having a guy like Torrey Craig who can fill in. So he was great tonight, and it was really good to see. Jokic's three-point shooting, when his shots start falling from three, and he was 3 of 7 tonight, great percentage, 43% basically. When his three-point shot is falling, it takes Denver to another level. I'm really curious to see what kind of three-point shooter Jokic can be, because obviously this year he hasn't been great. I think he's been better since the offense has become more balanced. I think when he was carrying things, I've talked about this before, this December to January stretch where he was carrying such a workload, the types of threes he was getting, they weren't the types where the ball just finds him, as the, you know, we get the ball moving and it ends up in his hands for a wide open shot. They were more forced. And I think that, you know, I think that he can shoot a better percentage. But the big question around Jokic, I don't ever want it to be a huge part of his game. I think that would take away from the other aspects of his game. But if he can become a 40% three-point shooter to the point where teams don't feel, oh, we can just leave him open, that's our best bet, he's so good offensively that we might as well just turn him into a three-point shooter. If he can get to the point where he's shooting 40% or better from three, even if it's only on two or three attempts a game, to me that makes Denver a lot better. So that's one of the things I'd love to see him work on this summer, is just become a little bit more consistent with his three-point shot. Barton really started cooking in the second quarter. I thought Barton was pretty solid in this game in the first half. This third quarter, he got a little sloppy and had some really ugly turnovers. But in the first half, I thought he was one of him and Gary Harris basically making shots from the guard position. Malik, Monte, Jamal, not as much. So he was scoring. Second quarter, 9 points on 4 of 6 shooting, had some nice plays, and he helped spark some timely runs, not just important runs, but there were moments in this game where you thought, man, Denver's looking ugly, they can't hit the broadside of a barn, they need somebody to provide some energy, and I thought Will Barton did a good job of that. Jokic did a nice job. There's one possession that comes to mind. Al Horford was knocking down shots early, and again, as much as Denver was missing, the Celtics early on were making that, switched a little bit in the second half. But in the first half, Horford was knocking him down. Jokic, one possession, he contests the three-point shot. And one of the ways to make a big, to punish a big for shooting those types of trail threes, you want to contest and you want to make sure that the rebound is secure. You don't want to just do a flyby. But once you see that the ball is secured, if you can rim run, sprint the length of the court and try to bury that defender underneath the basket, you can get an easy bucket. And Jokic did a great job in that second quarter. There was a great example of this. Maybe I'll put a video up on DenverStiffs.com. That's probably a good time now to announce. I did a sort of a companion piece to yesterday's show with some video clips up on DenverStiffs.com. So if you missed it, go ahead and check that out. I think there's like six videos, six little bullet points basically to kind of highlight some of the things I talk about on the show. Well, in this one, he rim runs, he buries Al Horford deep, and that's what you do. If you think about it, if a big is back, the furthest guy back and on defense, the other big trying to rim run, the defensive big can kind of get position and keep him from getting too deep in the paint. But if you contest a shot and you're shoulder to shoulder and then you sprint, the defensive player doesn't have position to keep you out of the paint. So Jokic, being a bigger body than Al Horford, did a good job of burying him deep, caught the ball in transition, and just laid it right up. Those are the type of plays that are, I think, are really, really important. And Jokic just knows when to find those. Denver had a lot of great looks, as I mentioned. Ended up 36% on the night, which is fine. That's about average. But it just, this was one of those games that felt like Denver could have shot 45, 46% from three because of how open they all were. And then my other note here before the half, Jokic was just so confident attacking Al Horford. I mean, he's just clearly not scared of him at all. It's interesting to see the types of players that Jokic feels so confident going at. Often there are a lot of your smart, high IQ players. Jokic, in a battle of wits, Jokic is just smarter than most guys and more skilled. The third quarter I mentioned was really sloppy. The Nuggets had 17 turnovers in this game, which I think 14 is about what you want to stay at, 14, 15 or below. You get over that, you kind of, typically you get into the danger zone. Denver had 17 and 6 of them came in this third quarter, kind of in quick succession. And then the other note from the third quarter, the other big note, Kyrie Irving, I don't even want to say he had a good game, because I thought that he really provided a contrast to Denver. You look at the Celtics last year, very balanced team, smart, worked the ball around, whatever. Kyrie, he had an advantage in this game, but I thought he pressed his advantage a little bit too much, and it was a real contrast to what Denver does. I know that there's scapegoats on Denver's roster. Isaiah Thomas, Will Barton, sometimes Torrey Craig. Guys, and I think it's kind of silly. You guys know my thoughts on Thrill. But you watch a guy like Kyrie, it's a lot more egregious than anything Denver has going on just in terms of a guy that really zeroes in on the rim. And tonight, there was just so many possessions where he was trying to go one-on-one. Now, that being said, Denver didn't have anybody that could stay in front of him in this third quarter. The third quarter was the one quarter I thought he was really effective. And you started to wonder, okay, is he just going to heat up and go for 50 tonight? Because Denver, for whatever reason, just could not keep him in front. And then there was this play in the third quarter that it kind of created a pivot point. Loose ball, I think we all remember it. A loose ball, Denver dives on the floor, looks like they have it, and it just fumbled out of their hands. Marcus Morris ends up getting a wide-open layup. And there had been a couple plays like that where Denver just, you know, Will Barton and Jokic run a pick-and-roll, and Will Barton throws it to nobody, and it's just like, okay, what happened? Like, these guys are starting to, maybe it's just not their night, and they're starting to find these weird things are starting to happen. And that's why I thought tonight's game was so impressive, is because as the ball started to bounce away from Denver, Denver tightened up rather than and played smart rather than kind of get nervous. I thought they played with a lot of poise and toughness in this one. Towards the end of this quarter, Will Barton started to roll. He had 5 points in a row at another pivot point. I talk about his buckets in this game I thought were in big moments. Well, as bad as he played for the first, 8 minutes, and he was really bad in the first 8 minutes of the third quarter, the final couple minutes, he made a couple big plays, including a three-pointer that kept Denver afloat and got them back into this game. Fast forward to the final 30 seconds of this quarter, because this to me was another one of these crucial pivot points. Denver's down 5. They have the ball, and they end up getting a three-pointer, a really beautiful play. You run pick and roll with Monte and Mason Plumlee, hit Plumlee on the roll, and Plumlee in one motion catches it on the roll and finds Torrey Craig wide open in the corner. Torrey Craig steps in with confidence and knocks it down, so 5-point lead down to 2. And then Brad Stevens calls timeout. There's 1 second left, 1.1. Brad Stevens wants to drop a Hail Mary play, and I kind of like it. Only 1 second. The odds of it working out are not that great. The one thing you can't do is turn the ball over. Michael Malone makes a substitution, puts Jared Vanderbilt in the game, which I love. First of all, it's a low-risk thing. It's like one job. But it also involves Vanderbilt in a way that, you know, feels meaningful. Like, hey, we need you out there. Even though you really can't screw this up, you can make a big play for us, so just be big and active. I just like it. It was like one of those low-risk opportunities to get a player in there and feel a part of the team. And sure enough, Boston did throw the ball away, so Denver gets the ball back, and then Millsap and Torrey Craig. I watched this play 3 different times because I wanted to see exactly if it was like just luck, Jaylen Brown falling asleep. Torrey Craig gets in the opposite corner. And it was not luck. Torrey Craig sets him up. He gets in line, and this is a crafty little play. You get in the peripherals of Jaylen Brown so he sees you right as Millsap grabs the ball. But right as he grabs the ball, he kind of slides to out of bounds, then cuts, steps in bounds, and it's like he did the perfect thing where Jaylen Brown felt like he had just looked at him, but then sneaks around, gets a wide open layup, and Denver ties the game and grabs momentum going into that fourth quarter. Absolutely loved that play, loved that moment, and it carried over into the fourth quarter. That same unit, and I like this unit, Monte Morris, Malik Beasley, Torrey Craig, Paul Millsap, Mason Plumlee, they set such a great defensive tone. I would not mind if this was Denver's regular rotation, even into the playoffs, to start fourth quarters. You start with what is probably, you could swap Malik Beasley for Gary Harris, and then it would probably be your best 1-5 lineup. But as it is, Monte, Malik, Craig, Millsap, Plumlee, that sets such a good tone for the fourth quarter. When it's winning time, get those guys out there. And sure enough, they turn this into a slugfest to start that fourth quarter, making some big hustle plays, getting some stops. And between the end of the second and the end of the end of the third and the start of the fourth, the Nuggets went on an 11-0 run. This was the game. When the Nuggets go into the fourth quarter with a lead, I think they're like 25-1, either on the year or over the last 2 years. I can't remember. So you know how big it is for Denver to get a lead because they can tighten up in a fourth quarter. But for Denver to fight back from being down 5, where it looked like, okay, they're going to go into the fourth down 5 on the road, that's a tough spot to be in. Instead, they end up going up 6 just a couple minutes in. That was a great run from a unit like that second unit, and I just absolutely loved everything about it. Jokic, I mentioned he was reading the game so well. The timing of his threes were clutch. One of the things that's great about Yoke, I thought Yoke dominated this game. You look at his stat line. It's funny to say this isn't a dominant stat line because for any other center, this would be 21 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, 3 block shots. I mean, he was blocking shots out there. 9 of 14 from the field. This statistically, it was very impressive, but for Jokic, it's maybe, you know, we've seen that stat line before. But nonetheless, the timing, everything he did was just so in rhythm. He knew when the team needed big buckets from him, and he knocked them down. In the fourth quarter, he knocks down 2 3-pointers. And they were clutch, put Denver up 8 and then 9 on back-to-back plays. And it was just one of those things where at that moment, I felt like Denver was winning. I think there were still 6 or 7 minutes left, but it was like Denver has this. They're up 9. They don't lose. They don't blow games like this. They're in their bag. And it was great. Just tough play down the stretch for the Nuggets. They played with such confidence, never got rattled. They were the hungrier team, I thought, down the stretch. And they couldn't quite close the door. So as much as Denver played great throughout the entirety of that fourth quarter, the final minute of this game, for whatever reason, Denver like took their foot off the gas. They almost stumbled right through the finish line. They're up, I think, 10 points and get 3 or 4 consecutive turnovers. And it was like head-scratching turnovers. Jamal Murray struggled with some really just sloppy entry passes, not entry as into the post, but just entry as in get the ball out of my hands to the elbow or to some other player at the top. Really sloppy, and it almost cost Denver all of their momentum. You go from up 10 with a minute 30 to only up 5. Up 10 with a minute 30, you basically have to miss every shot. They have to make every shot, and even then you still you might hold on to the lead. You might not blow it. But when you're up only 5, now you're talking about you need not just one bucket. You might need a couple buckets. So Denver put themselves in a really tricky spot in the last minute and a half of this game. But that was the only – there's only about a one-minute stretch where I thought they kind of lost focus. The no-look from Jokic – and I put this out on Twitter because the video was just too sexy. Jokic had a no-look to Barton. So Denver has 4 straight turnovers. They need a bucket because now the game is in a point where they can no longer just run out the clock. And Jokic throws a no-look pass to Will Barton for a layup that fools the entire defense. This guy, he was so confident and in control of what's going on that he could throw a no-look pass in that moment, and it was the right play, even the no-look part. If he would have turned and looked at Barton under the basket, the defense probably slides over and contests the shot, but instead he freezes the defense. Just a brilliant play and a fitting end, and then as sort of an encore, the very next play he finds Paul Millsap for a three. And what I love about this, in the first half, Paul Millsap got a 3-point shooting foul on Marcus Morris for Marcus Morris kicking his foot out and Millsap kind of bumping into it. Technically a foul, but it's the type I hate. Shooters shouldn't be able to draw contact by swinging their feet forward. Well, what I love is Paul Millsap slammed the coffin shut on the Celtics by knocking down the same a 3-pointer and getting fouled by Marcus Morris. He repaid the favor, and it was just such a cool way for this one to end. So that was it. Denver gets the win. It was a big win, their fourth one, and it carries some momentum into this portion of the season that you know, is very meaningful, obviously, for the Nuggets. And now you look at Knicks and Washington on deck. You never want to count your chickens before they hatch, but that's two teams that are struggling that if Denver can go into Boston and win in the Garden, they should be able to win both of those games, and now you set yourself up for a really good opportunity to hold on to that 2 seed. So this was a big one for the Nuggets, a great, great win. Malone, Thrill, Millsap, all after the game against Indiana, they all talked about the need to celebrate your accomplishments in life. And I couldn't agree more. I actually really like this perspective. You know, Denver climbed a very difficult mountain, and they did so without getting much help from the outside world, from the basketball gods, the lottery gods, the NBA free agency. They did this the hard way. They climbed to where they are at now the hard way. The Nuggets could be the 76ers who tanked for several years in one of the weirdest rebuilds in league history, only to cash everything in for a team that's kind of caught between the present and the future as the 76ers are, and it might work out for them. But, you know, I would rather be the Nuggets. The Nuggets could be the Lakers, never committing to the rebuild, treating their young players horribly, losing some of them for nothing, just trying to, you know, looking for the fast track. Denver did not do that. They could be the Timberwolves, who are now moving in the wrong direction. They, you know, maybe they peaked last year, got an 8 seed, got beat out of the playoffs very handily, and now they're back into the lottery. They could be the Celtics, who the Nuggets just swept in the regular season. The Celtics last year, everybody's darling. Best young core in the NBA, greatest coach in the NBA, all of these things. They, too, maybe peaked a little prematurely. Denver, I'd rather be Denver right now. They could be the Phoenix Suns, still bad despite having all of those top picks. If you look at their roster, it's a who's who of top prospects from the last five drafts, and yet there they are at the worst team in the Western Conference. And then, of course, they could be the lowly Knicks. Need I say any more? Instead, the Nuggets, with a playoff spot wrapped up in mid-March, they are the example. The city the light on a hill? God, I'm messing up this phrase. The shining city on a hill, is that what they are? To the rest of the league, an example of how to do things. I don't want to say the right way, because the only right way in sports is to win. So I don't want to say there's a right or wrong way. But they certainly did this rebuild in a way that I think connects the most with fans, and especially connects the most with fans in the city of Denver, a type of team that Denver can get behind. And you know, sports are kind of, I talk about this with D-Line Co. Eric Wiedem a lot. Sports are kind of like faith sometimes. You know, I got my first real credential on March 1st, 2015. That was the first time I went to a Nuggets game with a credential to cover them. I was doing so for Denver Stiffs, along with Jeff Morton was there. Andy Fine still running Denver Stiffs. I was still new on this blogging scene. That was 2 days before Brian Shaw was fired. So in some ways, I got my start right as this era began. I guess 2 days before the old era ended, I should say. And even if when I looked at the roster then, I didn't see a plan. There wasn't much hope. I was covering a team and it was like, well, this is fun to be at the arena, but this team ain't going nowhere anytime soon. I think everybody felt that way. ESPN and Kevin Arnovitz felt that way, wrote a very critical article about the directionlessness of the Denver Nuggets, and at the time he probably was right about them. The Nuggets were a team that lacked an identity, lacked a clear vision and a clear plan. But Denver went to the mattresses that summer, and then you could really start to see what was developing. Like many of you, no matter how honest you try to be with yourself, no matter how much you try to check your own bias, you know, in 2016, this team started to feel real with the arrival of Jokic. You know, I was one of the first sort of believers in Jokic when he arrived, even in Summer League. I brag about that all of the time because he's a guy that, to me, connects me to this team. He was the guy that first connected me to this team, and the guy I first said, you know, there's something here, not just something as in this guy's interesting. But by his sophomore season, I was sold at his star potential. I, in many ways, started the hype train around him saying, no, this guy is for real, not just a fun player. He's not Miles Turner. He's not, you know, Enes Kanter or whatever. This is an actual cornerstone to a legitimate team. And but, you know, you try to check your bias because in this industry, I'm closest to the Denver Nuggets. A lot of times when you're closest to something, you always feel like, well, I'm not seeing the forest for the trees. I'm too close to the situation. And the only thing for me that kept me from really believing this was a future playoff team and had the potential to be a future contender, the only thing that made me doubt that was that very logic of, you know, am I too close to the situation? Am I the one saying this? When everybody else is sort of telling me I'm crazy, is it because I'm too close to it and I'm wanting to believe this? That was honestly the toughest bias to sort of check. So it wasn't easy when the quote-unquote real media, some of the more traditional guys in town who maybe were slower to accept bloggers and people that were talking about analytics and looking at X's and O's and film breakdown and covering it in a new media way, in a blog type of way, both locally and nationally, laughed at all of us, called us homers, called us blog boys and amateurs. Even last year when the Nuggets fell one game shy of the playoffs, there was no shortage of people saying, look at these guys. They all said this team was going to be good and they can't even get into the playoffs. There was a lot of those. So you put so much into being a fan, so much time talking about these games and researching the players, the direction of the team, and in the end you start to feel like you're holding on to a certain type of irrational hope or faith, and it's so nice when that faith is awarded. Those opinions that you've tried so hard to cultivate and refine, they turn out to be true. So Nuggets fans, take advice from Paul Millsap, take them from Will Barton, take them from Michael Malone. Enjoy this moment. I always get this nagging feeling that if the Nuggets were to win a championship someday, it won't be the kind of singular feeling that makes it all worth it. It won't be this one thing, this binary black and white. before, if they didn't have a championship, it sucked. Then they got one and it was great. I honestly think spectator sports and fanhood in general, they're worth it regardless of a championship. A championship is just that cherry on the top. It's what rewards you for the long, for that long road, and if you allow it, an entertaining journey. But hopefully you can enjoy all the little check marks along the way, because I have a feeling no matter what happens with the Nuggets' future, we're going to be talking about nights like tonight when they first clinched the playoff series and all the other little benchmarks along the way. Hopefully this is the very beginning of the brightest era of Nuggets basketball to date. So enjoy this one, enjoy clinching a spot, and enjoy where the Nuggets are at in their process. We still have several weeks left of this year, but we can take a moment right now to reflect on the last five that have brought Denver to this point. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new episode.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.